Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
I was in a restaurant, a really good one in Las Vegas on Tuesday last week, and I complimented him on his list because it was all over the place. And it wasn't a telephone book.
It wasn't a tome.
Yeah. And he had some things on there that were reasonable, you know. And then, of course, he did carry things that were a lot more scarce and more expensive. And when you're in a surf and turf steak lobster kind of place, you have to do lots of different things.
Absolutely.
But I was surprised to see some local favorites here. Trousseau Gris and, you know, the Mathiasen White Blend was on there. And Leticia Pinot Noir was, God, it was like $70, which is really a decent price.
It's quite reasonable.
Yeah.
Pretty much the winery price.
So I'm looking for, rather than the thing that I know these 12 people would love, to real interesting. I even got a Chardonnay from Monterey because, you know, poor old Monterey doesn't get a whole lot of respect, right?
I wish that would change. It's such a fantastic
And so right. That's what I would like to see more of, is that if you have a big book, like many wholesalers do, is to kind of be more custom fitting to that lady or gentleman who are trying, I think, to do the best thing they can, create options for me, the diner, the guest.
Yes.
And when you have a broad menu that includes everything from ribeyes and to, you know, shellfish with some pasta in the middle, I mean, so you got to carry certain things that fit, you know, you got to have those big Cabernets for those people that think that's what they need to have. But had some nice rosés, a couple of Chenins from South Africa. I mean, I wanted to meet this guy.
Wow.
And he,
high praise coming from you.
You know, and well, he's just doing the right thing. Give me a bigger picture.
Yeah.
Versus saying, okay, we're a steakhouse, so it's got to have 4 pages of cab. And a vertical by this guy, and this guy. It's like, who cares about verticals? I mean, they're interesting to do a retrospective.
Yeah.
But
in a dining setting, the application, you got to wonder about.
Or if you're going to carry one of my favorites, Montebello, Ridge, get the one that you like.
Yeah.
And be done with it. Don't need to bring in the current one because it might be too young. But you don't need to carry 12 different vintages, in my view.
Yeah.
Because it's just complicated. Because now I don't know which one to get.
Yeah.
Because it really isn't based on money anymore. Who am I with? Is it a business? Is it, you know, family? Is it a date? You know, what's the reason that you're there? We know you're going to spend $75 on a steak because you're in Las Vegas and you could spend $200 on a steak.
Yeah.
But, and if everybody's spending $200 on a steak, well, maybe you ought to spend a lot more money on the wine, too. Or be like me, look for the GSM, which I'm a sucker for GSMs, just because they don't get any respect. And it doesn't even matter what part of the world they're from. Grenache mixed with Syrah with some Mourvèdre, it's like the perfect wine for a meat experience.
Yeah.
And when it's white things that you're going to be hankering for, I don't know, it just struck me that this Nicky Hahn Chardonnay was there, and I think it was like $40. And you could have bought a Rombauer for $120, you know, or whatever, and that would have been fine too.
Yeah.
But I'm just, you know, it's like coffee. You know, coffee's all about $12 a pound.
Yeah.
You know, which one do you like the flavor of, the Sumatra or the, African they're sure. different.
Sure, but even if you could drink Jamaica Blue Mountain every day, you'd probably get bored.
You would get bored. And also, that particular coffee is like Burgundy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always that terrific.
Yeah.
And indeed. It's light.
True.
Now, I love Bouchard wines. I always have. It's the only Burgundy house I ever visited in my life. If you see a nice little Bouchard wine, it's because I become. That's the other thing is that when you visit places,
yeah, very important.
I become very attached.
Yeah.
So, the magic of marketing, again, is to connect enough dots to make you a friend. And social space makes it easier to do that or quicker to do that. But you have to play in all of the arenas. Entering your wines in a competition, if you're a reasonably priced wine, I've seen Joe Phelps Insignia in competitions too, and I've seen really high-end champagnes. But it depends, it depends on the competition.
Question.
Is the notoriety of being in San Francisco as a winner better than LA? Yes. That's because the brand San Francisco is viewed different than LA.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, if there was a competition in New York, does it fit? I judged the New York wine competition, but it was all New York wines.
Oh, okay.
The Finger Lakes.
Right.
But there are two New York competitions in New York. One's coming up, I think, in about a month. And the value of being there is that all of the judges are somms and retailers from New York. It's not that they want New York wine. They've assembled a pool of experts and practitioners that might help the brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a bit of a crapshoot in a way, but if you don't, if you go into a casino and you don't place a bet, you're not going to win any money.
It's a great way of looking at it.
And wine is a little like that because there's so many. And again, we could drink a different bottle every day for the rest of our, there's only 365 days a year.
Sadly so.
Yeah. And so what do? You drink the same thing all the time? Maybe. Just like that lady who, lives in Orange County and she loves her Rambauer Chardonnay and that's just her go-to. And it goes well with everything. Well, it does to them. Just like somebody might buy at Pete's, Major Dickinson brand blend, not knowing what is the blend.
Right.
I always say, hey, Bordeaux guys, I don't need to know what the recipe is. As an annual Bordeaux tasting, which I know you've been to many times, they tell you, well, this is so much Merlot, so much Cabernet, so much this, that. There's always five to pick from. Gee whiz, I already know that. That's not important to me, the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
What's most important to me, after your quick sniffy sniff, it's all new wine, it's all from the vintage that just got released, is it carried here? Can I buy it? And what's the rough price? And then I'll decide. If I think, maybe I should go get a bottle or two of this, or I make a little note like you do in your either your iPhone or your notepad. Maybe there's 400 wines there. You're only going to have time to taste 80. I actually do in reverse. Some people start over here and go this way because it's by region.
Mm-hmm.
I go straight to the Sauternes and the sweet stuff.
That's brilliant.
You know why? Might not have time.
Get to it. Yep.
Get to it.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with trying the pies and the cakes and the desserts first.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No. And then I don't think it's for everybody because they say, oh, well, the sugar affects your palate. Well, not if you're good about cleaning up your palate after you've done that little exercise.
We're going to have to talk about the podcast, about the double spitting. I need that technique. You've just completely changed my world. Throughout our conversation, you kind of peppered it with names that clearly made an impact. Perhaps some were mentors, colleagues, people that you felt really had a very strong influence in some way or form on your career. I know that Richard Peterson, Dr. Peterson, is a formidable figure. I've been very fortunate to have interviewed him, and he just had the wisdom overflows. It's intimidating.
He's funny too.
He's absolutely fantastic. Have there been other individuals that you'd like to share with us that really had affected your mind and your heart?
Yeah, I Dr. Peterson, I met in 83, and luckily got to judge with him many times over the years, and certainly he is a one of the mentors, because he's very commonsensical. There have been a few buyers in chain accounts that struck me as individuals that helped me look at something just slightly different than maybe I did as a salesperson. And Kurt Fisher, who passed away, but he ran Weston Hotels Food and Beverage for a number of years in the 80s and 90s. The gentleman that was a Seagram, and there were some Seagram guys that touched me early on, because Seagram was very much in the fine wine business in the 80s, and Ab Simon being one of the real power of why Chateauneuf Estates portfolio got to be as cool as it was. Frank Schumacher, who used to go to Bordeaux and bring back the wines that he would say to the producer, because they'd show wines to him for export, and he'd say, "Well, do you have something that's just a little bit more?" and that idea of, you know, just something that's a little bit better. When I worked for Seagram, there was a couple of gents. Mel Elliott always said the same thing about never say anything bad about the competition, and there's hundreds of thousands of competitors. He says, but find the story and the authenticity of the brand that you're selling, and that will suffice, versus ever saying mine tastes better than yours.
Nice.
It's not what we're trying to do. Glenn Proctor, who is now in a whole different business, but you know, it was about flavors and about being on the continuum of flavors, and how do you farm for flavors versus farm for money?
Farm for flavors.
Farming for flavors.
I love that.
Yeah, Glenn Proctor and Charlie Sigaletis and Bruce Rector were all part of that Glen Ellen clan of folks that put Glen Ellen on the map.
Interesting.
I've had some really great bosses. I think one of my great current friends is Terry Wheatley. She runs Vintage Wine Estates.
Uh-huh.
She founded Canopy Management, and she also was my boss at Sutter Home when we were there to actually morph into Trincaro. And she is one of those folks that just mentors people. That's what she does, and she's an innovator.
That's fantastic.
And you know, that person always has your back. That kind of person is like,
oh, that's everything.
It's about building relationships. You know, don't ever burn a bridge, because you know you might need it someday.
Yeah.
You may not want to work at that company anymore and go over here, but the way that you exit is really important. And marketing is nothing more than the brand with the most friends wins.
That's quotable. That should be in a poster.
Yeah. And also, the more we know, the less we know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of the view, is that no matter how many bottles or tastes or opinions you know you get to have during the course of the year, you're still looking. You know, it's a very Mark Twain kind of thing. It's like you chart a course on a sailboat to go here, and even at some point you might have to adjust your course. Things change, and not unlike the taste buds of the American public change. You have to figure out where the puck's going to be on the ice rink during a hockey match. and there will be a time when whatever was popular in taste might morph and go over here. And when you're talking flavors, and again, it's about pleasures and palate, and you know, someone said, you know, just always remember when you're talking about wine, nobody needs it. It's just an accompaniment. It makes the meal better. It makes the conversation better. So you want to have something that goes with all that. Sometimes I might even order something at a restaurant because there's four people there and I realize, yeah, they probably aren't looking for a dry Riesling like I might. Right? So you think, what are you having? Okay, and then you kind of put it all together. Joanne Weir, who I mentioned earlier, has been a great mentor of mine too, because she made me think about ingredients.
Yeah.
And it isn't that we're having pork or beef or lamb. That's not the point. What are we doing with it? You know, are you sautéing? Are you putting it on a Weber? Are you, you know, how are you preparing it? Is there garlic? No garlic? Are there lots of spices? Is it hot? Is it not hot? You know, is it, what else is going with it? You know, and when you think about pieces of the ingredients, and the way that I got to do this with her a couple of times is that I did all the recommendations for all the wines generically for all of her books that had wine as a component. So I had to give her two recommendations for every recipe. And think about, well, how would coriander or cumin or some of these spices affect wines? And then you try them, just like, you know, we all know that salmon, because of its oiliness, is just terrible with Cabernet or Merlot or Cab Franc or any of those big, probably not so good with most red blends, right? But boy, you get a bottle of Pinot Noir that's not anything but good, and that just goes with grilled salmon for some reason. It's because the flavors are lining up and doing a tango. And we've all had those food and wine moments.
Epiphanies, yeah, absolutely.
You know, popcorn and sparkling wine. Hey, just had that the other day.
That sounds wonderful.
You know, it just, and then once you turn people on to it, because people forget that champagne could be just fine with butter popcorn. You know, you got to be careful not too much salt, because salt just kills all fruit. But, you know, that's why people like ribeyes with big wines, because the tannins over here and the big fruit goes really well with the fat and the protein. It just does this. It goes together. And so, you know, my favorite pairing of all time is some sort of great Sauternes. Maybe I can't afford a Chem, but there's got to be something I can afford to have with foie gras.
Absolutely.
It's like, wow. Oysters. There used to be the competition I loved doing. It was called the Pacific Oyster Wine Competition. Hmm. And it was held at the more or less the same time. A restaurant in L.A., the place in Seattle where the oysters come from. And then in San Francisco, I was at the Cliff House. And the guy that put this on was the oyster guy.
Hmm.
So he was a seafood company, and all these important people would come, and Sunset Magazine, Chronicle, you know, somebody that was a contributor to D.D. Cantor, et cetera, and Spectator, and we'd all sit there at the Cliff House, and we'd have to do 20 wines, not too cumbersome. Mm-mm. They'd already been culled and made into a manageable group, And so three groups of people had to taste 20 or so wines and eat, it was always Kumamoto's. Because the company up in Puget Sound, that was their, one of their things. And you'd have to have two oysters for every wine because you got to taste the oyster, taste the wine, and then taste an oyster. So very minimum, if we have 20 wines, we're going to eat 40 oysters. Not a bad, you know, afternoon.
No.
And you know what? We always picked a really good example. And the guy was really firm about not, there's no number one and number two. We're going to present the top 10 wines that go with oysters. And I'll tell you what they are after this whole thing is over. Hmm. And I was always impressed with, God, I didn't know I liked Pinot Gris that much. But apparently with oysters, I love it.
Context.
You know, and sparkling wines, certain sparkling wines. And, you know, to me, it's about imagining what's possible. And, you know, other mentors are a long time ago. But, I mean, I think about guys that I've been lucky to be around, like Peter Seashell, who is Bettina's dad.
And he
invented this brand called Blue Nun.
Hmm. How about that?
And he's just the most amazing fellow. And like Dr. Peterson, full of stories and full of reasons why you do like certain things, and he was even a, you know, a double agent during World War II.
I did not know that.
Neither did any of us. And if you get to be around these folks, you know, I was always admire Bob Trinchero because, you know, here's a guy that basically invented White Zinfandel.
Yeah.
And his brother Roger and sister Vera and the boys, the kids are all involved. And he would ask the simplest questions and he wanted to know what you had to say, you know. I even, you know, the 5 years that I was at Gallo, I thought Joe Gallo was one of the most curious people.
That's so cool.
And even though you're in a large organization with lots of employees and sales and marketing, et cetera, Joe just always wanted to know more. And I don't think that he's not a wine guy like we're wine people.
Yeah.
To him, it's about a business.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And, you know, he'd say things that would, you just go, really? Oh, well, yeah, I don't think rosé will ever be a big thing. But that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And then after a couple of years of being around him, you know, it was a bit like he asked lots of people questions. And he wasn't a CEO that sort of told you how it was going to be. He asked around. And I found that to be, and then he'd add that all up and come up with what was what he thought would be a good idea. After confirming it with, frankly, different tiers, distributors, retailers, restaurant, employees, friends, you know. And, yeah, he did some things. I mean, I have a picture of him on my wall.
Yes, you do.
I always wanted to do a story when I worked there that talked about when you're drinking, sometimes you don't know that you're drinking Gallo.
That's an absolutely fascinating story.
And Corey Brown was the only person I could get interested in it. Although Marvin Shankin did something in Market Watch, but that's a trade publication.
Yeah.
That's different. That was my favorite piece because it wasn't so much about a brand. It was about this family dynasty that... Yeah, they make Sonoma Chardonnay, and yeah, they hadn't bought Martini. Maybe they just bought Martini, yeah. But that they were in the import business, and they had some things, and they were always curious about, let's see if this works. You know, yeah, we grew up in Hardy Burgundy, and, you know, E&J Jug Wines, and they made an awful lot of sparkling Andre and Ballatore and some other products, but... what made them thrive as a company was that they were always trying new things. And their wine cooler's back. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yeah. I mean, they were one of the, they waited until all the other coolers were kind of out there. Observation. Then they came out with Bartles and James. Brilliant. And then they added the two guys that went with it as actors in the commercial. And I was at Seagram at the time, and we had Bruce Willis, who was a brand new upstart from Moonlighting series. Mm-hmm. And Pat Roney was the brand manager at Seagram Wine Coolers.
Oh, my.
Bartles and James and Seagram were the two, and everybody else kind of went away. And eventually they morphed from not being made with wine because of the cost of goods. Now it's back. The new Bartles and James has a couple of SKUs now that is made with wine. Because wine coolers weren't wine coolers after the first few years. We had an abundance of product lying around in California, which is why California Cooler and all the cooler phenomena happened was because wine was overstock, too much inventory, and they found a place for it. And they made coolers out of it. And it, today we have something else that's happening, a bit of a phenomena, is drinks in a can or a bottle that sort of mimic vodka tonics, Manhattans,
yeah.
Old fashions, etc. That's a hot category.
Pre-made cocktail too.
Pre-made cocktail. I see it, I go to people's houses, I see them drinking the White Claw or drinking the Berry Brothers. Oh, there's all these brands out there now. And I thought, so I try them once in a while just to see how they are. Some of them are pretty darn good. I could see, you know, especially if you keep the sugar down, for me.
Yeah.
If you keep the sugar down, it's okay. And sake's seen an explosion of interest as well. And wine's not going away. It just is evolving. And the categories that are happening, you know, you got your rosés. Is Riesling ever going to be a big deal? I don't know. I like Rieslings, but not enough of me are out there.
Yeah.
I think red blends make total sense, and they came along at a time when we were all enjoying wine. And I do think it doesn't matter what they're made with, you know, as long as it has a catchy name, and it delivers.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of red blends that taste great. You know, they might have Syrah, and it might have Cabernet Syrah. Might be, you know, might be some Sangiovese Tempranillo in there. You never know. And the absolute, once you get a balanced one, oh, you got a home run. In my view.
I absolutely love your life approach, not just wine, or for that matter, spirits approach. Your intellectual curiosity, the fact that you're so accepting. And that mentality, everybody's in the pool.
Yep.
I absolutely love that, because for someone like you that experienced so much and so different cross-sections and have so many choices, you still, I can see it on your face, you're still energized by things that are just good, that deliver value, that make sense. I know you've said some really fantastic things that are true wisdoms to live by, so... You probably already answered the question, but I'm going to take full advantage of your time and generosity and ask you this question that I often wrestle with, and that has to do with meaning of it all. What does it really mean, like human experience, who we are, why we're here? If you had an opportunity to just get the world to be quiet and not pay attention to anything else, but just really be in the moment. What message do you think you'd want to deliver? What do you think you'd want to say?
Frankly, never stop growing. You know, it's okay to grow older, but not up. And remain curious. It's going to change. It's always going to change. What we liked before, we still like, But there might be other things that we haven't tried. And so don't stop when it comes to adult beverages. You know, we know that there certainly will be things that you don't like, but you've tried it. Once you've tried something, you say, you know, I'm just not a bourbon drinker. I'd rather drink Irish. I'd rather drink Scotch. You know, I don't really get the Pinot Noir thing. It's not for me. Okay, well, then maybe you need to turn up the texture dial a little bit and, you know, move along to the light, medium, and heavy. And I think people, based on their upbringing of aromas of their youth, they like certain things. You know, the smell of fresh baked bread.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing like it. So if you like people like it when they go into a cellar on tour and they smell that red wine sitting in oak, and it's more pronounced after harvest. As we all know, we drive up and down the Sonoma or Napa Valley and we can smell fermentation. It's just like great. Hey, don't settle. Just keep trying different things. There's not anything bad out there, really. It's about you trying and deciding then, you know. Yeah.
Thumbs up or down.
Yeah. I like this. I think I'll try it again sometime. You know, pink wine? Well, is it sweet? I mean, that would have been the question of a baby boomer, because they got that White Zinfandel thing, and you know that was targeted at a specific group of people that probably are less likely to change, but it brought a lot of people to the dance.
Yeah.
And slowly some people leave that entry level. And there's a great box wines out there. They're good cheap wines. You just got to stumble on one and you go, oh, I didn't know I liked Malbec. Go figure. But it's a different taste profile and a different experience. So maybe you ought to buy more Argentina wine because that's their grape, you know? And we tend as culturally to stay in a certain box, you know. You can be brand loyal a bit, but maybe the brand isn't the brand. Maybe the brand is the region and the variety.
Again, exceptionally wise, and I feel like I owe you a debt of personal gratitude, because I was doing a bit of a happy dance in my head when you were describing how you taste wine. I intuitively came up with the same thing. I literally just do the aromatics first and push the glasses, and you validated something that, you know, I didn't realize. Somebody, you know, your esteem and knowledge and experience have done, so I was just thrilled about that. But in the larger sense, I think the messages that were delivered in this discussion are very important. This curiosity, this critical thinking, is so healthy and so gratifying, that if we just, each one of us, just take a moment every day to do something slightly differently, to expose ourselves just a little more, as you so poignantly said, the quality of life would be so much better. And I'm all about elevating the quality of life, and I know that throughout your life experience, that's what you've done. And it's been such a pleasure getting to know you.
Well, thank you. Likewise.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.